Welcome to Michelle Speaks. I am your host, Michelle Lawrence. It's the middle of the day and the middle of the week, but you've tuned into the right show to get you over the hump. We will have riveting conversations about what I call the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. So let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in His sight. Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners. This is your host, Michelle Lawrence, and I am so excited to have another hour with you this week to discuss what I call the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. And like with every show, we're going to get this one started with scripture. And this week's scripture comes from Proverbs, the 18th chapter, the 14th through the 16th verse, and I'll be reading the NIV. The human spirit can endure in sickness, but a crushed spirit, who can bear? The heart of the discerning acquires knowledge, for the ears of the wise seek it out. A gift opens the way and ushers the giver into the presence of the great. I've just read for you Proverbs, the 18th chapter, the 14th through the 16th verse. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and hearing of His word. This particular passage struck me to my core. So today I'm going to go deep. I need you to buckle up and stay with me. The human spirit can endure in sickness, but a crushed spirit, who can bear? Listen to the message. To be stricken with illness can take a toll on your body, but it's a crushed spirit that destroys both the body and the spirit. I need you to pay attention to this message, because your enemies aren't just looking to kill you physically, but to strategically disassemble what you've built, discredit you as a man or a woman of character, and simply destroy your legacy. What's worse than death is a crushed spirit. This state of mind kills not just individuals, but generations. But if you've proven as a person or as a people that these tactics won't work, the next level of attack is to take away resources. And by resources, I mean education. For some, this is all too familiar. An attack launched to strip you of opportunities to advance. And by doing so, the goal is to strip away hope. Hope keeps dreams alive. It creates villages in our communities. It promotes unity amongst the people. It perseveres, and it simply never gives up. I understand why Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X were a threat to so many, because they were a symbol of hope. Now, I don't pretend to be the Mockingjay from the Hunger Games, but I do relate to Alicia Keys when she says, "This girl is on fire." And that I am, to restore hope, to revitalize communities, and renew our schools. It is indeed time for change, and we are in fact looking for change. But truthfully, we are the change we're looking for. And so, speaking of change, this week's song is none other than Sam Cooke, "A Change Is Gonna Come."
Change gonna come. die. Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back out on my knees. Oh, there've been times that I thought I could last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
That was Sam Cooke, A Change is Gonna Come. Many of you are familiar with that song, and I think it's appropriate for today as we are launching in to the W around wisdom. Knowledge is power. And the reason we're talking about knowledge is power is because of our guest for today. He is back to talk about education. And before I introduce him, what I want to do as a little prelude is regarding to change. I never had an opportunity to meet or to see Mahatma Gandhi, Malcolm X, or Martin Luther King. But the hope that I did get to see is none other than our guest, Otis Hackney, the Chief Education Officer of the City of Philadelphia. And I knew him before he had that role. I met him when he was standing on the corner as the principal of South Philadelphia High School. And as he stood on that corner to welcome all his students, and as he would exit the building when it was time for them to leave to say goodbye and to get home safely, he was their symbol of hope. When they merged another large high school into his high school, bringing it from 600 to approximately 800, 900 students, he still represented the hope that there would not be further violence, the hope that the racial issues that were spurring in that school would disseminate, the hope that things would get better and a change would be brought about. And change that high school he did. So please join me in welcoming back none other than Otis Hackney. Otis, are you out there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good afternoon. Yeah, you've been in meetings all day, so it feels like morning, right?
Yes.
I am so glad to have you back on the air and to continue our conversations around the change that you created, the culture and environment that you created, not only in the high school, but the culture you're creating in your current role as the Chief Education Officer of the City of Philadelphia. And so we're going to jump right in because I do know that time is of the essence with you. Just share with our listeners your primary role as Chief Education Officer of the City of Philadelphia.
Well, first, thank you again for having me on your show. So my primary role, obviously, I am in the appointed by Mayor Kenney, cabinet member, as a chief education officer. And the two major initiatives in our office that we are focused on are the expansion of quality pre-K in the city. So the PHL pre-K program is in the Mayor's Office of Education, as well as the implementation and expansion of community schools in the city. And I think that's how we've gotten to know each other, because of some work that I did at South Philly and, you know, beginning to start the community school model. And you and your previous role were very important, key and factor into, you know, the success of that work. So you kind of helped me get here and helped put me in this position here. So, you know, and I have always been very appreciative and thankful for that partnership. But the other pieces I do is, you know, advise the mayor on educational policy, you know, partner with the school district, work with, you know, closely with members of the School Reform Commission, the SRC. And just anything else, you know, doing outreach with schools and, you know, or constituents around any issues regarding education or, you know, opportunities for young people in our city.
Well, I'm excited that you have all of those responsibilities, but more importantly, around the two that you mentioned up front, the work that you're doing with pre-K in particular and the community schools. I couldn't think of anyone better in a position to serve in that capacity, given what I saw you do at South Philly High. Talk more around the work around the pre-K, because I'm simply excited that they have you, someone who is committed to students getting the resources.
Thank you for that. And it's true. What we want to do is when we look at the number of children in our city, our 3 and 4 year olds, I think it's about, you know, around 40,000, maybe a little bit more from 1 year to the next. We want to make sure that the opportunities for them to be exposed to a quality, you know, pre-kindergarten program is available. It's a plan that our mayor laid out, and so it's about 15,000 of them have access to some type of program. We want to grow that number and close that gap for children, because the importance of, you know, being not just kindergarten ready, but also, you know, that beginning reader. You know, we talk about all the issues that impact children, and, you know, what, you know, the predictability of students that can't read on grade level by third grade, and all of these, you know, things that we have learned or research has shown us that's really important. And setting the table early for, you know, with pre-kindergarten, if you look at, you know, children or adults that have been successful, a lot of them will say, yes, you know, yeah, I remember when I entered kindergarten, I knew all my letters, I knew all my numbers, I could write my name. Those are the things that happen in a quality program.
Absolutely.
And we want to make sure that children have those opportunities, because when they fall behind, they really it's very difficult to get them caught up.
And so what are some of the initiatives around making sure that this program grows, and how can people or institutions partner to get you additional tools and resources?
So, well, the first thing is, just to get it out there, the controversial piece is it's around, you know, just the funding itself. So, you know, our mayor had a very ambitious plan about how to fund it. So we needed additional revenue. So that is when, you know, the mayor's office, in partnership with city council, the Philadelphia beverage tax was passed. And that's what's funding the program. So those resources, those dollars are going right back into the community, especially our communities in most need, for the children. So right now we're doing 2,000 seats. We were hoping to be able to expand to 3,000 seats this year, but due to litigation, we are holding back until we get through the final round of court at the PA Supreme Court level. Right now, the city has been successful at the two lower courts, and now just trying to make sure that we can move forward after the PA Supreme Court weighs in, so that way we can expand. Our goal is to get to 6,500 seats that we're funding. The great piece about what's happened in our first year is with the 2,000 seats is that a number of providers that we have worked with, mostly, you know, minority and women-owned businesses in our communities that people are very familiar with, for, you know, especially for our for-profit providers. We do have some non-profit providers, obviously, but for our for-profit side, a number of our providers are minority in business, minority and women-owned businesses. The other piece with that is the number of people. There's over 200 people that have been hired through our program.
Wow.
I've met some of these people, and it's just really exciting when you meet them and you hear them, especially those that were unemployed and now employed, or when you talk to centers and say, you know, with the additional seats, they were able to raise salaries for their employees. When you encounter parents who now, because pre-K is available to them, and mind you, it is free for the school day, school year. For all 3- and 4-year-olds of that live in the city of Philadelphia, you must be 3 by the September 1 okay. of the current school year. And that's it. There's no income requirement. We do ask for some information when people register just so we can, you know, track. We always want to track data. But we are looking to just make sure that it's available because we wanted, you know, working class people to also have opportunities to take advantage of these programs as well as those, you know, that are most need. And so that's how the program is structured. And like I said, we're just really excited. You know, when you encounter parents who now can go back to work because the cost of pre-K or a quality pre-K center was more than what they were making, and or it just made it was just better for someone to stay home. And now they feel like, you know, they can go out and be employed knowing that their child is in a quality program in the city. And the other pieces that work for families that qualify is that, you know, if they're eligible for other subsidies, there's other monies that can cover, you know, before care, after care, and pre-K. That doesn't come through our program, but we're working with providers to teach them how do you get those different funding streams so that way parents can get before care, get after care, get the summer covered in addition to the school day, school year that the PHL pre-K is covering. So it's a lot of work and a lot of coordination. We have over 80 providers that we work with from across the city, and just making sure that we can deliver, you know, a quality program to our children and for our families is just, you know, it's just a blessing to be able to be a part of it, you know. And like I said, for the mayor to say, Otis, I want you and I want this in your office and I want you to make sure it gets up and running, you know, it's a, you know, I'm thankful for the confidence, the vote of confidence from him. And sometimes I look at him like, this is a lot of work, but it's definitely worth it.
Well, nobody can do it better than you, Otis. What a yeoman's job to take it on. And quite frankly, you know, hats off to all of the other moving parts that are impacted as a result of this program. I mean, imagine doing business with minorities and women-owned businesses, 200 additional people being hired, increases in salary, and the financial impact that this free education is having on those parents who can now go back to work or at least look mm-hmm. at work, that changes the household income. All related to education, right? And education to me becomes the equalizer. If I have access to the right tools and the right resources, then I have the opportunities. And as I said at the opening of the show, opportunity leads to hope. And mm-hmm. that is what I'm feeling this program is doing and will do for our community. Now, some may say, oh, so it's only 2,000. Well, that's 2,000 more than it was, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
And so I'm sure that the 2,000 that are impacted, the children and the parents are better off for it.
Exactly. I mean, and you want to phase these things in. You know, it's, you know, one, most importantly, you would have to find funding to do every child in the city.
Right.
But the other piece is making sure that as you, you know, scale up the program, you know, you're building systems and putting things in place so that way it's, you know, more user-friendly for the parents, you know, making sure that you identify the right partners. Because if you think if we had to do this, you want to identify and support these pre-K providers across the city, making sure that they have the business background or acumen that they need in order to, you know, make sure that their business is stable, make sure that they can provide a safe environment for children,
mm-hmm.
And also making sure that the curriculum is where it needs to be in terms of, you know, some standards across, you know, that have been determined through what a solid curriculum looks like for children to make sure that they're ready for kindergarten. And then also that transitional piece that our quality centers do to make sure children are prepared for the first day of school for kindergarten.
Right.
And so it's not just opening up the number of seats. You have to make sure that you have a number of providers out there to absorb that number of seats and that their quality, and then what supports do they need to make sure that they can rise to that occasion. So another thing that we've seen with some of our providers that we worked with that were our growth or provisional providers is that they've moved up in quality since we've been able to partner with them, and many of them speak to the direct, you know, supports and additional resources that came in that helped them move up in quality through the Keystone Stars rating system. And that is just another stabilizing factor that we've been able to do for our pre-K providers, you know, across the city. So it's really exciting. I was not an expert in pre-K. I'm becoming an expert in pre-K right now. But in terms of the systems building aspect of, you know, what it takes to get a program up and running across the city, I mean, that part, you know, it's like it's an experience that is I can't put a dollar figure on it for what I've learned and been trained to do now.
Well, you're making the program scalable. And what folks should understand is that when you're launching something that can impact this large number of individuals, that you want to ensure that the foundation is firm and that these moving parts are actually working in tandem. And
right.
So to hear that you are partnering with 80 businesses and that you have with these partners, they have improved and become more enhanced in their provisions. That says a lot. So that when you get to the upcoming year or the next rollout and the next phase or cohort, whatever we're going to describe as this group of kids, then you will be able to do it with greater excellence and take on more. So I appreciate the work that you're doing around pre-K, and you know, I'm gonna dig a little deeper just around your heart around it. So folks, you need to hear, it's not just a job to Otis. And he's probably on, you know, on the phone going, she's about to go there. I do need you to understand this man has a heart for our kids. And he has demonstrated this time and time again. So as much as he makes light of the work and saying that, you know, there's a lot of work, what I assure you is that it doesn't end when he leaves the office, that it is work that he is continuously thinking about and working to ensure that children and families have the best access and resources so that they can grow and be prepared for kindergarten. And so I wanted to pause just to say thank you, Otis. I don't know that you hear that enough or that you get a thank you often. And so I wanted to pause to say you are making a difference. You made a
thank
difference
you.
In South Philly, and you are making a difference with this program. So I wanted to pause and say thank you. And what I'm most excited about is that the best is still yet to come with this program.
Well, thank you very much. It's much appreciated. You know, you do what you're called to do, and this is what I feel like I've been called to do, so I'm doing it.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
You don't argue with it. I used to argue with it and try to fight it. I don't fight it anymore. It's like, if this is what I'm called to do, then just be obedient and just go do it.
Look, that's a whole nother show around obedience and doing what you're called to do, Otis.
I talk about it, you know, with folks I know. I said, look, just be obedient and look, he won't give you anything you can't handle, so just go do it.
But it does make a difference to understand that, and I need you to hear, listeners, that's the wisdom I'm talking about. The part of the scripture that says your gift will make room and put you in the presence of greatness, that's exactly what's happening with Otis Hackney. His gift has made room that he's gone from being the math teacher to the principal to now having impact on the fifth largest city in our country. The gift making room. So when you are walking in your purpose and you are doing what you are called to do, it won't be easy. It gets easier because you embrace that it's not easy and you understand that there are going to be some learnings along the way, but that you are in fact equipped to get it done. So Thank you. Thank you so much, Otis. I do want to dig into the second part of this program before we go to our first break, and that is the community schools. Share more about what that looks like.
So community schools, it's basically an approach to how do you partner with schools, create an environment where you can deal with the challenges and obstacles and barriers that negatively impact the child's learning, while also providing opportunities for growth and enrichment. And what it is, it's so for our schools, each community school gets a what we have termed a community school coordinator, who is a city employee, works in partnership with the principal and the school, and their job is to do exactly what I just described. And so when we think about the challenges, so some of them are basic needs in terms of food, clothing, and shelter, right? So we don't necessarily do the sheltering piece, but we will find partnerships or work with folks. If we find that a child or family is homeless, how do we connect them to services? And that just takes one thing off of a school principal's plate and even a counselor's plate. I mean, because if you think about a high school counselor and some of the things that they're supposed to do, that's not exactly what they were trained to do.
Right.
To deal with some of those issues.
Right.
And some of our schools, we have, you know, we have food banks. One of our schools at Gideon Elementary where, you know, we have a program set up, I think, in partnership with Phil Abundance, where children take home, you know, they get 5 pounds of food to take home once a month. For our families in need, that's meaningful. We have clothing closets where children, you know, for interviews or if they just need clothes for just regular purposes, and you walk in and it's like some good stuff in there. And I mean that, and I sincerely mean that. It's not like, you know, just good enough for them. No, it's like real clothes in good condition, and our students have used those for interviews. And so how do we create that type of environment? But also on the other end of, you know, how do you have farmers markets and making sure that fresh produce is brought into those communities? So it's like I said, it's not always just dealing with a need or a crisis. It's also how do you expand their horizons or resources or enrichment? And I think a lot of people hear community schools and they just want to focus on the negative thing. So every community school doesn't necessarily have a medical facility in it. And none of ours do at this time because we're still in year one. You know, when we talked about scalability and phasing in programs, it's one of those things where you have to develop over time. But how do you better coordinate health services in that community? So when you see people in need, if they need immunizations, connecting them to the services, making sure that children and families can get there. And so it's really, when I say we definitely set the floor for what we do, but we're not setting a ceiling for the amount of work that it takes or that it will take to be successful in a community school. And so it's each school we tailor community school plan around the needs. We tell our folks that we want to be subscriptive versus prescriptive, meaning just like when you subscribe to the magazines or music you want, you pick it. So we're not going to come in and tell you what you need. We're going to go in and ask you, what are the things that are most important to you? This is what data shows that, you know, some of your biggest challenges, and let's talk about it in our community school meetings. And so we have meetings with parents and community members and students and teachers to talk about what those issues are. And then now let's identify the priorities, and then let's identify the next steps that we need to take to address them. So that's why every community school is different, but the bones are the same in terms of how do we deal with, you know, redundancies in services or gaps in services for children and families. If it's around adult education, so how do you know if you have parents who are just like, I need to go back to school because I have some college, or you might have some that need to get a GED or whatever, how do we connect them to those services? So it's either bringing those services to them or pointing them in the right direction, because many of our people, they want to ask for help, but they're afraid. So how do you make sure you have the right people in the building that are very approachable, meaning our coordinators, so that way people will go in and be vulnerable for a moment and say, I need help. And I don't think people, from my experience from working in schools for a long time, I think people really take it for granted how much strength it takes for someone to walk in to a school or into, you know, some social service agency or whatever and say, I genuinely need help. I want to change my condition. And you have to be able to receive them and then point them in the right direction or provide them with the services that they need. And so, and that's really our approach. I mean, so when you talk about things from the heart, it is really from the heart. There's a lot of technical pieces that we have to do to make sure that we're doing it right and systems building to make sure that those things are running right and moving smoothly. But still, it all comes down to the heart of the people that are in the building that are engaging the students and families and making sure that we're delivering on those services. But I tell folks, it's not a light switch. It's more like a dimmer, you know. So it's not something you just flick on and off. It's like you kind of have to ratchet it up and build up and build in trust in the community so that way they'll come to you, but also identifying those smart partners that want to come in and work with you and develop those relationships over time and then be able to provide the services and enrichment opportunities that our children need.
And just when you thought pre-K had your hands full, you go into the full explanation of what you're doing with these community schools in this project. And ladies and gentlemen, I need you to hear that there was a gamut that he just shared. Everything from clothing to food to partnering with those for immunizations. That takes a lot of coordination. It takes a lot of collaboration. You're influencing, negotiating, all to ensure that our kids and their family and their parents get better access, and quite frankly, that they are not in class being hungry instead of focusing on the learning. So I want us to, we're going to go to this break, Otis, but we are certainly coming back to talk about the difference that you've made and the change that's not just on the way, but that is in play right now. This is Michelle Speaks at 860 AM. I need you to stay plugged in as we continue Knowledge is Power with Otis Hackney.
This Wednesday, 1 p.m., drop everything that you're doing and tune in right here, the heart of the city with me, Malik Boyd. This is a no-holds-barred show. Real issues, real discussions, real solutions. And with some great guests, hot topics, and some surprises mixed in, I promise you this will be a show you don't want to miss. The heart of the city with me, Malik Boyd, Wednesday, 1 p.m., right here on 860.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today. Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the Y for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the Y, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the Y. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive. All with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit ymca.net/more.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
688-9104.
...could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Michelle Speaks. We are at Wisdom Wednesday with Knowledge is Power as our topic. And our guest is none other than Otis Hackney, Chief Officer of Education for Philadelphia. And we are jumping right back in because time is of the essence. And so, Otis, you were sharing as we were closing out the first segment with regards to the community schools, and you talked in particular about the role of the community school coordinator and the role they play in partnering and gathering additional resources so that the students, the teachers, and I want to talk a little bit about the teachers, but that the students and the parents aren't going into these classrooms or parents taking their kids to school with worries of eating and clothing and medical attention. Thank you for that work. And I know I've said thank you on the onset around pre-K, but encouragement is needed for the one that is leading the initiative. And so I want you to be encouraged. I want you to feel supported around your efforts, because this is culture changing. This is not about changing one school, one family. This is about changing an entire community and eventually a change that will impact our entire city. And so I want to pause and say thank you for the work that you're putting in both of these programs. And this is just, you know, ladies and gentlemen, two of the items that he has to do in his current role. But I need you to hear the significance of them and how they're going to impact generations. Education impacts generations, not the here and the now, but years and generations to come. So, Otis, how, in fact, if at all, what do we do with the teachers? What support do they get as a result of this partnership?
So it's more indirect, the services that they get, because if we can, and like the reference I used earlier with, you know, taking some things off of a counselor's plate,
yes,
taking some things off of the teachers as well. You know, we mm-hmm. want our teachers to be able to go into the school, you know, prepared to do what they need to do. You know, we're thankful that they got a new contract, especially in the, you know, in the school district, schools. But they can go in and focus on the things that they are trained to do as well. You know, so when we talk about teaching and learning, you know, we want them to be able to go in and do a great job. And so if we can take some of the issues off, now students are always going to have great relationships with teachers. That we are not trying to replace or supplant, but we are just trying to supplement some of those other things that, you know, schools are overwhelmed with. I don't know if some folks realize the challenges that some of our schools face, the concentration of poverty in some of our schools. And so it's very daunting for a principal, for a teacher, or that building staff to deal with all of the challenges that some of our children come to school with, and yet, you know, are still held to, you know, high standards, as they should, but without or needing additional support. And so we want to make sure that we can provide that support. You know, I think when I was on your show before, I talked about a mantra that I adopted from Restorative Practices around
yes.
high expectations with high support. And so that is something that we talk about all the time, and it's just something that spoke to me when I first heard it, because it captured what my attitude or what my spirit was around the work that I did when I was a teacher. And it was like, you know, right, having these high expectations for the students that I taught when I was a math teacher, but what does support look like? Because I'm not just going to give you a huge task, but if I'm going to do that, I need to make sure that I'm supporting you every which way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to just make sure that our teachers have that support, the support from the mayor's office, so that way they can do a stellar job. You know, the principal in me is still like, I want my teacher to do a great job. You know, I want you to be ready. I want you to be prepared.
Absolutely.
You know, to deliver a great lesson every day, help a kid out that's struggling. You know, make them feel good about themselves even when they are struggling, so that way you can encourage them to keep, you know, pushing through. Those things are still expected. I don't get to do that work directly anymore, but I want to make sure that, you know, there's no excuses for those things not to happen. And so if that's our goal, you know, it's a lofty goal, but, you know, you won't be successful in any plan that you have if you don't have extremely lofty goals. So, I mean, and that's it. And I have a great team here. I know you've been, you know, talking about the work that I've been doing, but I have such a great team. There's over 30 people that work in my office, and we work hard every day, and they're a great group of folks to lead. So, you know, and I could not do this work without them. So I just want to make sure that my team is acknowledged and shouted out, because they really make sure that these things are moving as well.
Well, shout outs to the team, and for all the good work they do with
you. Off to the education.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it. And so as we go back to the piece about teachers being effective, imagine if they actually get to do the job that they trained for, right? So indirectly, this program is allowing for that, for them to be, less around, psychologists and psychiatrists and doctors and nurses and attending to all of those components and actually learning how to master the craft of teaching and being
right.
effective at it. And so that's what this program offers. The more that we are able to take care of the children, the more we are able to offer aid and assistance to the parents. Subsequently, the children will come into the school less needy in those areas and more focused around how do I get a better education, and here's where I'm struggling in terms of content and context around whatever the subject matter is, as opposed to I haven't eaten, I couldn't sleep last night, and all of those other issues. So this program, while, and I wanted to highlight that, this program, while it doesn't carve out here's the impact or here's what we're doing for teachers, if we are able to take care of these children and if we're able to take care of their families, subsequently we free up our teachers to teach.
That, yes, but I still will add to that teaching has still evolved, though. As our clientele or our students have changed,
okay,
we have to make sure that we still change as well. So you highlighted some things that I talk about when I spoke at a graduation for some recent college graduates that were in education. I talked about my four C's that I have. And you spoke to two of them. And so it's, one is content. You got to know your stuff. Two is craft. You have to know how to deliver it. You got to know how to teach. But three is care. You have to care about your kids, and then the fourth one is, you know, if you do those three things well, you build community. And so whether it's in your classroom as a teacher, because I was a teacher at Germantown, and it might have been crazy when I was there, but in my classroom, there was a sense of community in my class, because these were the things that were like, we don't do that in Mr. Hackney's room.
Right.
And so when you hear kids say that, you're just like, okay, all right, I'm building up a community here. I got a movement going. And it was my own little tiny movement in my one little classroom, but it was mine. You have to have that, because if you don't know your content, you're not adding any value to the children. If you don't know how to deliver it, then you just create, you know, chaos and mayhem in your classroom. If you don't care, kids will realize that immediately. There was a great educator I know who retired from Philadelphia, and he gave me this quote. I heard him say this one day. He said, the kids might not be able to read, but they can read you.
Ooh.
So if you don't care about them, they will figure that out really quickly.
Wow. The kids may not be able to read, but they can read you.
Mm. Yes. I mean, think about it. I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
They know if you like them. The smallest kids in kindergarten, if you're not nice to them or whatever, they get a sense of it, and they just don't conduct themselves in the way you would like to see them, you know, behave every day. And then, like I said, you have to build community. So those are the things and things that I've, you know, just always strive for and wanted to do. So, but even as, you know, we think about what teachers have been trained to do, but we think about our customer base, or think about our students as, and when I say that customers, I mean that in the politest way, not in a very business way.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to adapt your practices to make sure you're meeting the needs of the customer, or what happens is the customer gets dissatisfied and they go to other places, or you don't get the customers that you want.
Right.
And so my thing is, how do we make sure that we're not only just teaching, but you're also creating these environments for kids, because they need that. This new generation of kids, this, you know, current generation of kids, they're more into their feelings and emotions and all these other things. And so just going in with the old school mindset of, you know, just sit down, fold your hands, and just listen to me lecture, that doesn't work.
Right.
It's not a very effective teaching strategy for today's generation of digital natives who have all the information that they want in the palm of their hands, literally. You have to have a different approach. So it's still growing and adapting and teaching as well. But we still have a ton of great teachers that do that every day in the city of Philadelphia and, you know, elsewhere. So, but yeah, I just wanted to make sure that that's not, you know, I the principal in me will never let go of what we should be pushing for. Okay.
And so there's still a standard. There's still a standard for the teachers.
Oh, definitely.
And an expectation.
And a standard for principals. I mean, hey, it doesn't stop there. There's a standard for principals as well.
But what I also hear you talk about in addition to the standard is support, right?
Yes.
And so the balance that brings is I have a standard, but I also have support has always been the difference maker for you. It's been the difference maker now from what I hear from Germantown as the math teacher. But there is something that you do that I won't say is just unique to you, but you have found a way to master it and be able to leverage it along your journey, and that is changing culture. What do you do that makes you so effective at changing it, whether it's the classroom or in the city?
I think it's something that I had to accept early on, and that was part of my own self-reflection and journey was you can't make anybody do anything.
Mm.
All you have is leverage and influence.
Okay.
You can't make anybody do anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so, you know, as a kid, my parents could try to tell me to do something.
Right.
But they couldn't make me.
Mm-hmm. At some point, the fear factor's not there, right?
Right. And that's what you just have to. It just depends on what your level, your tolerance for fear factor, what it is.
Right.
Because you still have kids that are not obedient or just be disruptive or defy or whatever. So it's always a choice. And I think too many of us, they think that you can make people do things. You really can't make people do anything.
Mm.
There's always a choice. And so my attitude and approach to how do you get people to move or do things is understanding the power of leverage and influence.
Mm-hmm.
So as a principal or as a parent, yes, you have a lot of leverage.
Right.
But if you do things that are, like, inappropriate, you lose that leverage and you definitely lose the influence that you have over them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a standard of how you conduct yourself on a regular basis. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, so what you're describing is the difference between being controlled versus committed. You're
correct.
Describing where folks may have control because of either position or power, but that doesn't cause folks to be committed to them. But what you manage to do through what I hear you say, influence and leverage, is gain commitment because there's
right.
a respect. And you talked about that once before, so I'm going to give you a few minutes to finish highlighting those things.
And that's, I mean, if you think about people who have been great leaders, they're very influential.
Mm-hmm.
They leverage how people feel about them, how people feel about themselves. They influence people's actions so that way they can follow them. But it's also, once again, the standard that they set for themselves that makes people want to follow them. So going into a school as a school leader, as a teacher, it was a certain way that I wanted to be and conduct myself. When you bring up respect, I said, you know, I was always one of those people that, you know, and maybe because of the part of the city I grew in, it's like, yeah, you got to earn my respect as much as you want me to give it to you. And see, and I have that understanding of our young people today. And so it's like, you know, my thing was always treating children and parents or whomever that came to my door with dignity and respect.
Mm.
And not being able to freak, because that didn't make me feel smaller by doing that. You know, I've heard people or adults in the building like, they need to show me respect. I'm like, well, show them respect.
Right.
It doesn't make you smaller. by you being respectful first, or even when they're disrespectful, you maintaining that level of decorum that is necessary, because maybe it might not work on that individual student that you're dealing with, but the other students are watching.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, you know, like I had a coffee with one of my former students that graduated from South Philly. He graduated from Penn now. I mean, he graduated from Temple. He's working at University of Penn doing some government relations stuff.
Wow.
And we were talking about this very same thing. And he reminded me, he said, no, Mr. Hackney, we were all watching you when you were there. And because I was bringing up the internet, he's like, yeah, we were paying attention. And you realize the rest of them are watching you. So I'm just like, all right, I don't have to really worry about this one because I might not be able to save this one.
Right.
But, you know, these 100 kids that are watching this interaction right now, that's the impact that you want to have. And then that's when you start to see a cultural change in the school. And sadly, it shouldn't be about the leader all the time. You would hope that, you know, you can put anybody in a school and these things work, but it is what it is. But understanding that importance of leverage and influence. So it's, you know, folks, I would hate when people are like, oh, you're like Joe Clark. I'm like, nope. If the Joe Clark method worked, then they could just easily find a bunch of Joe Clarks and go in schools, and that would be it. I said, but that's not it. And I said, in the piece that's lost when they talk about, you know, because they remember the Joe Clark with the bat and the speaker and all that. It was really relationships and stuff that he built with the students
right.
and the teachers
right.
in the movie. That was the part that moved the folks to want to be better and do better. I said, but, I mean, you could just get, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody out of the military or the police. Like, you can just get somebody just come in and be a drill sergeant. I said, but that's not going to change the culture. It will for a short period of time, but it's not going to fix anything.
Mm.
And so it's really, you know, finding that balance and where you need to be. But I tell folks, you can't make anybody do anything. So all you have is leverage and influence. Use it wisely. And that's it. You know, I'm oversimplify it, but it's really, that's my formula.
So I would add to that, though, knowing you.
I know you Otis, will.
Knowing you, though, because I'm adding to your C's, right? What you're mm-hmm. describing about being able to have, you know, influence and leverage is also character and confidence. And as a leader, you demonstrate that. So I can't, you know, get past this first student or this student that is disruptive because I'm confident in who I am and I'm no longer challenged by what's going on and have to prove myself to a student. But I'm also mindful that I cannot get out of character. I can't be pulled into what I always call the rabbit hole because you decided to go down it. And so I have to use wisdom, which is why I have you on today, to say this is not the time nor the place to handle this. Or if I am going to address it, I need to address it and never lose sight that I am the leader. And never lose sight that everybody is watching me. And in those moments where I may not always be cognizant or conscious that people are watching me, it is so embedded in my character on how I need to show up that I can do it without having to think about it all the time. So those are the pieces that I would say make you effective in creating this culture, is because you had character and confidence. And students respect character and confidence. Just be who you say you are. Now, I'm a test who you say you are, but
yes.
Be who you say you are.
Yes, and that one, and you know what, that is really true. Some of the hardest kids that I've ever, you know, you challenge them, and or they challenge you, and they just want to see if you're real or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get past that, but once that's still leverage and influence. Once you get past that, then I'm like, okay, then they're yours.
Right.
You know, then they're like, do whatever you need them to do, or if there's a problem, Mr. Hackney, I got it.
Right.
You know, it's when you have a student who you know can win the fight and just like, know what, I'll go settle this. And they settle it. And I'm not talking about with violence.
Right.
All right, Ms. Hackney, that's it. It's not.
Exactly.
And you're like, it is? Like, yeah, no, it's not, we good. Okay. You know, it doesn't always work, but it can work. And so I appreciate that. But, no, it is making sure that you embody that for them every day. And I understand my role. You know, as a black man, African-American man, whatever label someone wants to try to put on me, I know what it means to my students, and that's whether they look like me or not, because you still, even so, whether it is for children that look like me, that's one thing, but for those that don't, so they have, you know, they don't have one archetype for what a black man is and can be or talk or how do they sound or, you know, what they can have or achieve.
Right.
It's, you know, really modeling that for more than, you know, just my folks. Is it most important to me? Most definitely.
Absolutely.
But our folks also have to be able to interact with others in the world. And so I want to make sure that they're able to do that, too, so that way you're not limited or you're not boxed in or you're not defined by, like, okay, this is the neighborhood I grew up in and these are the only blocks I can walk and that's it. Like, no, you should be able to explore the world. And, you know, so it's understanding that role. And I think that's the approach that, you know, that I've had. I haven't always been able to articulate it. And so that's where, like, I guess the wisdom comes in over years of experience, where it starts to be, the clarity comes in. It's like, oh, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, that metacognitive piece of the work of like, okay, you know what? The muscle memory is good. I do these things naturally, but now I really need to be able to give language to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to be able to share that with others, because you can't say, oh, I just do it, you know, by instinct. No,
right.
It's a little more than instinct.
Right.
You know, so that's my approach.
But that is also what is paving the way to change. you know, to make the necessary change in education from pre-K to the community schools. It's being able to, I just did a workshop called Write the Vision and Make It Plain. It's being able to do those things and creating the pathway so that others can follow and say, how do we replicate what's working? Rather than reinvent the wheel, how do we take it from just Gideon to other schools that we are making provisions?
Right.
And then that's how you and I got started. I'm like, we're going to start with South Philly and then we're going to figure it out.
Sure
and
enough.
Then how do we replicate this? What closing remarks do you have? I can't believe we're already at time. We got about 30 seconds. What closing remarks do you have for the listeners, Otis?
Well, first, I just want, and I'm sorry, I just banged on my desk. But first, really, just want to congratulate you again on you for, you know, everything that you've done and thanking you again for your support. But also, you know, during your transformation and this new role and new work that you're doing, and helping people in a different way, but a very meaningful way for so many. And just, you know, allowing me the opportunity just to share the work that we're doing here in the city, you know, to try to improve, the circumstances for, you know, for people, our citizens of, Philadelphia. So it's exciting. We're hoping that we can continue to grow the programs. You know, like I mentioned earlier, we have to get around the beverage tax litigation and everything, and I know it's controversial, but it's really going to some awesome programs that are definitely helping children and families in our city. And you know, if we can get to the pieces around the parks, recs, and rebuild and creating, like, those little pieces that you know, brighter lights in the community and a rec center and more programs that address the needs of children and families, like, we take those things for granted, and they're not just for folks that don't look like us. And just really quickly, I was at a meeting and someone said, because there was some changes that took place at one of the parks near them, and this one gentleman was upset because it was a dog park that was built in, and he was like, we don't do dog parks. And this one sister was just like, why can't we have a dog park?
Wow.
They can have, like, and it's like that mindset of,
uh-huh,
why can't we have a dog? They aren't the only ones that have dogs. We have dogs. Why can't we
right.
have a dog?
Right.
Those are the chains and cycles and things that we have to break that hold us back. Because it that also creates more of a disconnect among the, you know, across the generations. So, but, you know, like I said, I just want to thank you for, you know, allowing me and giving me a venue to just share the things that we're doing and just, you know, and talk to you again. It's always a pleasure.
Well, Otis, thank you for coming back. We are always having an airtime for you to share the great work that you're doing. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Michelle Speaks. Wisdom, knowledge is power, with none other than Otis Hackney, Chief Officer of Education for Philadelphia. We are so grateful that he was able to tune in with us to participate with us today. I need you to hear something. The change you're looking for is the change you can create. Otis shared his 4 C's. I'm asking that you do the same thing, that you care about your community, that you're committed enough, that the difference that you want to see made, you take the first step. It is time for a change. But stop looking for someone else to take the initiative. Look at the man or the woman in the mirror and say, it's your time. Thank you for staying connected with me today. Hit us up on MS Speaks Radio, M Speaks Radio at Twitter, M Speaks Radio at Instagram, Michelle Speaks Radio on Facebook. We are so grateful for this hour with you and look forward to having the hour again on next week. Till such time, be blessed. 860 AM, Michelle Speaks.